Energy Transition, episode number 85. Our topic today is threats multiply to global energy security. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Morning. Please, David, let's start with you. Another conflict, Israel and Hamas, not desired by us, of course, but with a potential to threat the global energy sector. Do you see risks in the global energy security?
Potentially, yes. I mean, certainly not at the moment. We haven't had an escalation that would impact oil supplies or LNG supplies globally yet. Hopefully that won't happen. The key, of course, as it always is in the Middle East, is maintaining the free flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz, and with Qatar being the second largest exporter of liquefied natural gas, all that flows through the Strait as well. And, you know, Qatar supplies an awful lot of gas to the UK, to Europe, and Asian countries like Japan and South Korea, India, China, Indonesia. So as long as the free flow of those commodities is maintained through the Strait, then probably we're not going to see a major spike in oil prices. But of course, the markets are nervous about it. We saw a 6% spike in oil prices during the course of last week in the wake of the attacks on Israel. And with Israel now preparing a ground war, massing 300,000 apparently troops, tanks and artillery, and about to go in to Gaza, you know, this does have the potential to escalate. Iran is the major supporter of Hamas. Hamas's headquarters are located in Doha, the capital city of Qatar. Russia, Syria, you know, Lebanon. We've had some reports of incursions by Hezbollah on Israel's northern flank in recent days, out of Lebanon and Syria, the Golan Heights. And so, you know, there's a lot of potential flashpoints here that could threaten global energy security. But at the moment, anyway, we haven't seen that happen.
Yeah, perfect. We have Lucas with us. Good morning, Luca.
Good morning, Luca.
Timmy, you see that this conflict can contaminate and can be something similar to 50 years ago, 1973, or you are very far from this situation?
That's an interesting question, because there's been some, you know, talk in various news sources about comparing it to the 1973 Yom Kippur War, where Egypt did their famous attack on Israel on the holiday, caught them by surprise, and it led to the Arab members of OPEC putting in an embargo on oil exports to any country that supported Israel. And it set into motion a whole range of panic by particularly the European countries, because they were so dependent on the Middle Eastern oil. And it had the global community fracture at a time of the Cold War, where you had everyone running around, kind of like what happened with the natural gas supplies last year, undermining, undercutting everybody, saying, I'll pay it, you know, just make sure that I still get my oil, kind of thing. But this time, it's different in many ways, in particular that there's way more sources of oil out there besides the Middle East. There's more LNG out there besides the Middle East. And so therefore, the entire global oil and gas market is significantly different. At the time of 1973, America's production was in decline and they were no longer a swing supplier, but now it's different. So there are these differences, but unrest in the Middle East is always an issue, because they are such a significant supplier that it can affect prices in a negative way.
Yeah, Irina, you are very familiar with natural gas issues. And do you see that makes sense, has natural gas storage in Europe, but at the same time, Qatar has a very strong flow to Europe, as David mentioned. How do you see natural gas flow worldwide?
Well, I don't know about worldwide, but Europe is in trouble once again. I just checked natural gas prices in Europe. They are on the rise, have been on the rise for about 10 days ever since the war began. And it doesn't matter that storage in Europe is like 100% full. It doesn't matter because, you know, traders know that this storage does not cover 100% of any country's consumption for any meaningful period of time. Yeah. And Europe has put itself in a very, how should I put it, ironic situation. Let's put it this way, because it cut off relations with Russia after Ukraine. And it said, it's okay, we'll take in more gas from Azerbaijan. And then Azerbaijan went and started ethnic cleansing in Nagorno-Karabakh. So that's, you know, kind of controversial as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think Europe is, well, I know Europe is not importing any LNG from Israel directly because Israel is not producing LNG, but it's importing LNG from Egypt, which gets some gas from Israel. And now that one of their largest fields, Israel's largest fields, has been shut down, of course, it would lead prices higher. Then again, we have moral issues. We, Europe, I mean, has moral issues with Qatari gas because of Qatar's financial support for Hamas. And then we have LNG workers at Chevron's plants in Australia going to strike again. And I don't know, it's kind of a perfect storm. I just read a news report from Euronews, I think, citing some climate something NGO, saying that we might get lucky. Europe might still have a mild winter and storage will do, which tells you all you need to know about how, you know, some parts of European decision makers in energy policy are thinking. We might look out again. We might have a mild winter. But meanwhile, we'll have much higher prices going into winter.
Can I ask a question of everybody? So Europe has signed a lot of long-term contracts. Are those fixed prices or are they variable? So if there's like if the prices spike now, but they have these long-term contracts, is there provisions in there? I haven't seen details of these contracts. They haven't been released or I haven't found them. On whether there's a force majeure, will they get charged more? I mean, do you know?
I have no idea, but I think on general principles, there are clauses regarding force majeure or, you know, major changes in global market prices.
Right.
Yeah, normally long-term contracts, you have a clause that if you have something wrong, you can control and can repay and can compensate or end the contract. So
right.
And the contracts are a very good option.
I don't know how many of these long-term contracts are starting right now immediately, by the way.
I think
some of them are like 20 researching. Yeah, like 2026, mm-hmm. I think is the big one with Qatar.
We have SRB asking.
Yes, the Israeli government told Chevron to shut down the platform for safety reasons, obviously.
You mean Tamar?
Tamar.
That's the
field.
Israeli field, yeah.
Oh, great.
Offshore in the Med near Cyprus, yeah.
Can I add just something here? Lebanon had opened up their natural gas offshore exploration bidding, and Total, Eni, and Qatar are forming a partnership in order to explore and develop the natural gas fields off the coast of Lebanon. And Israel and Lebanon had reached an agreement before about sharing those boundaries. And now there's some speculation that maybe that agreement could be in jeopardy.
Oh, great.
Yeah, but Tammy,
good news just keeps coming.
They are starting exploration at that time. So it takes 3-4
years. It takes
years,
a while,
David,
yeah,
to have some results. Yeah, it's not a good time because we need gas, natural gas now.
Yeah.
Irina, and about the International Energy Agency that are incentivated Europe to finance the switch from wood burning stoves to gas stoves in Africa. Is it real?
A comic relief moment. Well, apparently the IEA is very serious about it. They have a whole initiative, or Europe has an initiative, I don't know. But they want to give African women, because they are being disproportionately affected by the effects of wood burning stoves and dung burning.
Yeah.
Because that's the fuel that a lot of African households use, for lack of anything else that is affordable. So it appears the idea is to, I don't know, buy a lot of gas stoves and ship them to African countries. And it was, I read in an interview with Fatih Birol, but I'm not sure they know what happens afterwards, because it's easy, just get every family a gas stove, even as in the US, certain interest groups are trying to ban gas stoves for reasons of health dangers.
Well, look, they can get a good discount on the gas stoves that the DOE here in the U.S. is going to outlaw. So,
they can ship them directly to Africa. Yeah, exactly. But when I wrote about this the other day, there was one reader on Substack who had worked in Africa for a very long time and who painted a very, very grim picture, which I had suspected is the case. Families cannot afford to buy the gas to fuel their new gas stoves, let alone electric stoves. That will be, an option for a very, very small majority of all these hundreds of millions of people who have no access to electricity.
Exactly.
So there's a very tiny majority that has any access to electricity to use an electric stove. The great majority has no access to electricity and they cannot afford gas. This is why they are burning anything burnable.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
David, there is a question for you, specifically for you. Huh?
I thought wind and solar were LNG, coal, et cetera, irrelevant, right? Yes, it's just around the corner, Mark. Yes, the miracle solution.
And hydrogen, and green hydrogen.
Totally. As soon as we get that 45V tax credit worked out, hydrogen's going to be the miracle fuel. Of course, that's the plan. It doesn't seem to be working out so well.
Well, Irina just had a Substack this morning on the hydrogen in Bulgaria, which sounded quite distressing in terms of what it's going to do to that valley.
I am extremely distressed. Yeah,
good. Andrew,
the climate. Candy,
is
the climate.
Is that criticism?
I don't know. I don't know.
Which one of
I'm
us
not
is
sure
candy?
What that means.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm candy.
That may be another word, yeah.
No one's ever called me that before, but hey, I'm sweet.
But yeah. David, tell us, please, United States has huge reserves of natural gas exporting to Europe, to Brazil, and to every part in the globe. So you see some kind of risks for the United States with this conflict increasing with the exports of natural gas?
Well, I mean, I think that there's potential opportunity for our LNG export sector if Qatar somehow becomes entangled in a conflict and, their LNG exports are shut off. I mean, that's more opportunity for the United States LNG industry. We're in the process in the United States of more than doubling our export capacity for LNG over the next 3 years. And assuming we can get the gas to the LNG export facilities and pipelines, and the Biden administration doesn't find a way to cut that off, There's incredible opportunity here for the U.S. sector. And of course, with prices rising internationally, that's going to increase profits for our LNG exporters here in the U.S. and in Australia and other countries that export LNG. You don't want these kinds of opportunities to arise, obviously.
Yeah.
People are dying brutal, gruesome deaths. And we're talking about energy, but, that's part of it. There's not much risk here for our sector. There's just a lot of opportunity.
It's opportunity instead, yeah. And Andrew is trying to clarify his comment.
Commenter Candy. I don't see Candy commenting.
No, in the comments, but all four of us are climate deniers quite clearly. We do not deny the existence of a climate.
Thanks, Andrew.
I don't think anybody ever has. But yeah, whatever.
Just genius commentary. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. And people, and Russia with his natural gas. What are they doing with natural gas that they are not exporting to Europe at that time? Are they selling for any other part of the world?
Yeah, they're selling to China. They just built a huge pipeline and they're planning to expand it. But they're also, expanding the local gas network because, as you know, Russia is a huge country and a lot of it is in remote areas which have not been gasified until now. So the government has a program to significantly expand the local network. So they're raising domestic consumption as well.
Great. Tammy, you see a chance of a global cooperation to reduce the risks of energy security with this conflict coming?
Maybe. I mean, it's interesting to see how there's a few different countries lining up in order to be a mediator in this dispute. So we have Russia saying, we'll be a mediator. And Turkey said they will be a mediator. And there's China in the background saying things. So it's interesting that none of the other Arab nations has stood up to back Hamas just yet. Unlike, 1973, where there were several Arab countries who came in to support it. So I think there's opportunity there for cooperation. Interestingly, the International Energy Agency came out of that oil crisis of 1973 in order to facilitate consuming countries' cooperation as a pushback to what OPEC was doing. And now it just seems entirely irrelevant in many respects. So I think there's opportunities there. And what's interesting is that we're in the fog of war right now. And it's all we can do is speculate on how these things are going to turn out.
Good. Irina, you mentioned long-term contracts, and so what are the alternatives to the long-term contracts? Short-term contracts how can they deal with this?
Yeah, well, there is no alternative to the long-term contract because the European Union was a huge fan of the spot LNG market when LNG was cheap because there weren't so many consumers. They had that pipeline gas from Russia. They couldn't be bothered to think long-term. So they actively discouraged long-term contracts for gas supply. They actually changed their contracts with Gazprom. They didn't want long-term commitments to Gazprom, which is fine, because there was cheap LNG on the spot market. As we also last year, you can't trust the spot market because things happen, to put it mildly. And now they have woken up and started closing long-term agreements, even though they really hated them, especially Germany. And Germany, remember, they were going to get off gas entirely in, I don't know, a few years, a decade. Yeah, that's not going to happen. And apparently there are still people capable of rational thinking in Germany and elsewhere in Europe. And we are seeing long-term commitments for gas supply. because they know they need it.
Yeah.
We have a LinkedIn user. I'm not sure who is he.
Great insight into, yes, it was great insight. Yes, I didn't even know that. So thank you for that information.
Thanks, Tammy.
It's the 50th anniversary next year because they were formed in 1974.
Oh.
Is that 50? No, it'd be longer than that.
Can we see? Yeah, it'd be 50. That'd be 50. David, you remember,
thank you, Grant.
You have to remember the call for export price controls will grow louder as the price of oil skyrockets and affordability crater. Sure. Especially now that SPR levels are at historic lows. Yes, that's the other, that is the real threat to U.S. energy security, right? Now that, you know, we're fighting a proxy war with Russia and Ukraine, and now we have pledged our full support to Israel in its conflict with Hamas. This occurs just after Joe Biden, for purely political reasons, drew down our strategic petroleum reserve to 40-year low levels. We have 17 days supply in the reserve now of our average daily imports. The target normally is 40 or 90 days supply. It's a really bad situation in that regard. Hopefully, you know, the United States doesn't get drawn into an actual ground war, active participation in a ground war anywhere, because we don't have the resources to do that and keep our military supplied with fuel. That's an unfortunate situation here in the United States.
Yeah, but David, SPR is important if the United States are involved in some kind of conflict. It's not the case.
Right. Now, we're not actively involved in a ground war right now. But when you go through, you can take this out through the iterations of potential outcomes right now. And the possibilities are endless, including China deciding, well, hey, the United States is preoccupied in Israel and Ukraine. Now might be a good war to move a good time to move on Taiwan.
Yeah.
Which there's a lot of concern about, folks. There's a lot of concern about that possibility right now. And if that should happen, well, the U.S. does have a carrier group out over there. And military assets in Japan and the Philippines and others stationed in that general region. But does the U.S. really have any longer the financial wherewithal to get involved in that kind of a conflict when it's also already engaged with Russia and Ukraine and in the Middle East? And so, you know, pray that doesn't happen. I'm not expecting that to happen, but the world is full of surprises, folks, as we've seen the last few years. And there's just a lot of potential threats and all of that, getting back around to our topic for today, potentially negatively impacts all of our energy security.
So, but the argument is that if only we were more invested with wind and solar, then this wouldn't be an issue. And I've heard that coming out again, where we need to accelerate the transition because this just demonstrates how problematic the global oil and gas market is and whatnot. So,
$175 trillion come from? I mean, that's the real bottom line question on that. Is McKinsey estimates, and it's a conservative estimate, McKinsey and Company, that it would cost $275 trillion for the world to get to net zero by 2050. Where does that money come from?
Yeah.
$275 trillion.
Positive thoughts, David. Positive thoughts.
Yeah, but the problem, instead of oil and gas, will change to minerals. So it's not...
Exactly. It's just switching one dependency for another, unfortunately.
It's a similar problem, but with different actors.
I wanted to add that Canada's first LNG terminal might be operational next year.
Really?
The Coastal GasLink pipeline is 98% finished. So
that's on the West Coast, right?
Yeah. There's no plans for an East Coast one.
What's the intention? To export?
To export the LNG to Asia.
Great. SRB is coming.
SRB, the mess with Iran orchestrating terrorism in the Middle East is the legacy of the Carter government in 79. Well, the Carter government certainly didn't help things, that's for sure. I think the origins of all this go back a long time before Jimmy Carter. But the U.S. administration dealing with the Shah and Iran and all that certainly didn't help the situation, if you just put it that way.
David, you are being asked about debt.
Eight times the U.S. debt, nine times actually, but yeah.
Printing money every day.
Right. Yeah. You know, we can just print money, no problem.
Yeah. Doug is here again. Thank you, Doug.
Back up by thermal. Yes, Doug, that's right.
You're
absolutely
right.
And it's a fact that the proponents of renewables constantly try to ignore, but it's a reality.
Yeah.
That's great. Let me see. Yeah. Okay. Any other comment about the threats we have in energy security?
Might be a good time to invest in one of those backup generators, folks.
Yeah. And hope for diesel. Another mild winter, which would be the result of climate change. So I don't know.
Yes.
But it's interesting when these things happen and energy security, people start to worry about, am I going to be able to heat my house? Am I going to be able to cook my food and charge my phone and all that? Then I think it puts into question some of these other initiatives that governments have been pursuing. Because when the rubber hits the road, as that saying goes, it affects people. It affects how they're living. And it could have a profound effect on where the transition goes from here.
Yeah,
interesting. More one comment from Doug.
Yeah, you're right, but they won't believe you.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, that's right. Okay, people, let me only add something from our team. We have Irina Slav from Bulgaria, energy writer. Tammy Nimet, energy consulting specialist from Oxford, England. Oh, sorry, UK. David Blockman from Texas, consultant, writer, speaker, podcaster, and miner of absurdities. Me, Armando Cavagna Cole, and the partners Sandstone Group and Catholic University in Rio de Janeiro. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you, everyone, for the questions. That was great
discussion.
Thank you. Everybody, have a good and safe week.
Thank you. Great. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.